This is the Bob Soucy Show on Patriots.com Radio.
Perrine in the backfield off Brady's left hip. Amendola starts it in motion. Brady takes the snap. Rolls right, throws to the end zone. Catches Brady. Touchdown, Danny Amendola!
The Bob Soucy Show is your source for in-depth Patriots coverage and all things NFL. Join Bob for exclusive interviews, statistical breakdowns, and the best coverage of your New England Patriots.
Gostowski trying to win it in overtime. The snap, the spot, the kick is airborne to the uprights, and the kick is a game winner!
Join the conversation by calling the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
Left foot forward for the quarterback, hands extended. Takes the snap, retreats in the pocket, under a rush, throws across the middle, touchdown, Rob Gronkowski!
Now, here's your host, the radio voice of your New England Patriots, Bob Soucy.
And hello again, everyone. We welcome you to our Subway Fresh broadcast studios inside Gillette Stadium, where the Patriots are preparing today, of course, for week number 16 and their 15th game opposite the New York Jets here in 2014. The Pats coming off their win over the Miami Dolphins, shutting out Miami 27-0 in the second half en route to that 14-13 win last Sunday to ensure a sixth consecutive AFC Eastern Division championship at a 12th since 2000. The Patriots again with the record run on division crowns Bill Belichick, separating himself from Don Shula, 12 division titles, the most by any head coach since the 1970 AFL-NFL merger. And for quarterback Tom Brady, he adds to his record as the starting quarterback for 12 division championship teams. The Patriots, in addition, of course, continuing to keep pace with Denver. Broncos with a win last week, and coming up on Monday night, they will play against the Cincinnati Bengals, going into action in week 16 with the 11-3 record like the Patriots. But of course, New England has the tie-breaking advantage over the Denver Broncos when it comes to the number one seed in the AFC. And the Patriots visiting the New York Jets, they're coming off only their third win in 14 games this season, surviving against the Tennessee Titans, that 16-11 struggle. In fact, are the Jets able to survive a bid by the Titans to recreate a Music City Miracle in the waning seconds, play with multiple laterals a la the Cal Stanford band play. And of course, the original Music City Miracle, and the one and only to this point, was that throwback to Frank Wycheck against the Buffalo Bills in the playoffs some years ago for the Tennessee Titans. But the New York Jets, as we know, playing under head coach Rex Ryan, now in his sixth year, it seems so far removed for the Jets since that period when New York went to back-to-back AFC championship games, losing to the Colts and the Pittsburgh Steelers in successive years, so close to reaching the Super Bowl under Rex Ryan. And now, of course, it appears by many accounts in New York that the Jets are so close to the end of Rex Ryan's tenure there. Not that he won't find work very quickly elsewhere, whether it's in television, as he reportedly has told some people in New York, or back in the coaching profession right away. He's going to get a job certainly as a defensive coordinator, if not as a head coach, much sooner rather than later, if indeed the Jets do follow through, as many expect, and end the Rex Ryan tenure in New York after this season's end. The Jets again taking on the Patriots in their home finale Sunday at 1 o'clock at MetLife Stadium. The Jets players, including DeBrickashaw Ferguson, who made the actual presentation, certainly making a statement collectively in their locker room in front of owner Woody Johnson after Sunday's win over the Titans. DeBrickashaw Ferguson, the veteran offensive lineman, stood up, gave Rex Ryan the game ball, and afterwards a number of Jets players, including Massachusetts' own Breno Giacomini, certainly spoke out on behalf of Ryan. They want him as their head coach moving forward, but still, given the circumstances, it certainly seems as though Rex Ryan's days as the head coach of the Jets are numbered. Whether or not they are, certainly his team will be ready to play against the Patriots. They always are, even though New England has dominated the season series throughout recent memory. This Jets team, however, did win, of course, a year ago in overtime, that controversial ending after Nick Folk was given a second chance due to an unprecedented penalty at the time by Chris Jones to kick the game-winning field goal. And then they played so closely again in October in their next meeting this year in Week 7 when the Patriots survived with a two-point win, ironically and fittingly enough, because of a blocked field goal by Chris Jones, rejecting a 58-yard attempt by Nick Folk, one of several crucial blocked field goals by the Pats here in 2014. The most recent, of course, was the block by Jamie Collins, setting up the Kyle Arrington return for a touchdown this past weekend against the Miami Dolphins en route to that 41-13 rout of Miami, the ninth win for the Pats in their last 10 games, and as noted, the 11th overall in 14 games for the Patriots as they get ready for the Jets. Coming up on today's program, we will talk a lot about the matchup, of course, between these two AFC East division rivals, the Patriots and the Jets, what has been really across the last 6 years, the most spirited rivalry, you could say, in the AFC, save for maybe the Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers. When it comes to the Patriots and the Jets, Ryan matching wits with Belichick and Brady, and again, the Jets, certainly a team that has to come into this game, despite all the struggles that New York's endured in 2014, with a lot of confidence, feeling they really had a great opportunity to win in Foxborough in their last meeting, and knowing, of course, that they'd beaten the Patriots a year ago in the Meadowlands, taking nothing for granted going into this weekend, especially in a matchup of two teams who know one another so well. Coming up on today's show, as we address the subject of Pats and Jets round two in 2014, we'll visit with Sebastian Vollmer. He's our scheduled Patriots player guest, and Sebastian, of course, in his sixth season, has been a division champion every year here on the offensive line for the Patriots, a native of Germany out of the University of Houston, and certainly a fixture for the Pats when healthy on that offensive line. In addition, we'll speak with Bob Wischusen, who's the voice of the New York Jets on radio in New York, and as well calls college football and basketball on ESPN. Travels across the country all the time. We'll talk to Bob certainly about the Jets. Hopefully time will allow us to speak as well about some of the coaching and quarterbacking prospects he's seen this year in his travels and calls on the college scene. In addition, Sean Stellato, who's a player agent in the NFL, represents a couple of Patriots, Kyle Arrington, along with Joe Villano, has written a couple of books during his very young life. He's only in his late 30s, and I say that as someone 10 years his elder. Sean, a product of Salem High, wrote a book recently, No Backing Down, and it documents the quest of the 1994 Salem High football team and its determined head coach, Ken Perrone, to reach the regional Super Bowl despite a teacher's strike and orders to cease and desist the football team during that strike. The Salem head coach made a stand. There was no backing down. We'll talk to Sean about the subject of his book. He was on that team, a junior quarterback at the time. Also, maybe speak a little bit, too, about this time of year as a player agent. Now, as you start to call the college scene and begin to prospect players who will be draft eligible, and as well helping to prepare young players coming out of college for the NFL Combine, what that experience is like, and a bit about the business side from that standpoint. Won't get into too many specifics with regards to what Sean does in terms of his individual clients, but do want to ask him a little bit about, again, the whole process of canvassing for potential clients and then helping them train and prepare, and how much things have progressed and how much more sophisticated they've become in recent years. Hopefully Scott Zolak has some time, and Jackie Britton will join us as well in our second hour, of course, from the Patriots Radio Network in the case of Zoe, and from Patriots.com in the case of Jackie Britton. But first, I've got to go to our friend from Florida. He's been on Twitter a lot of late, getting a lot of tweets every day from Nick Salerno, otherwise known as Nick Baby Love down in the state of Florida, and a good Patriot fan, if ever there was one, and certainly a devoted fan of the Kraft family, and in particular, the late Myra Kraft. And Nick, we had a chance for the first time to talk to you on air last week, and it's certainly a privilege and a pleasure to welcome you back into the show this week. How are you, my friend?
Pretty good. I wanted to say happy Hanukkah and happy holidays and Merry Christmas to the Krafts and everybody in New England. It's 80 degrees and I can't stand it today.
You're dreaming of a white Christmas?
Right.
And a white Hanukkah?
Yeah, and so besides the fact that Kevin's following me, and I hope you follow me, I'm sorry to ask you that on air.
I'm following you. I'm getting a lot of tweets every day.
Well, like I said, people have asked me for 3 or 4 years to do this, and I'm doing it now. I want to give a shout out to the Lighthouse. It just came up with me because that's something that Mr. Kraft would love. They're in every city. They're independently funded. It's for the visually impaired. So they're also very big Patriots fans. The one in Boston, Worcester, and Providence, I've talked to all the people there. It's pretty amazing when you talk to somebody that's totally blind, Bob, and they find a way through Braille and the TV to watch and get so passionate about the games. You know, it's a great thing.
It is, Nick, and I appreciate it. Certainly well said, and it's a wonderful cause.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just like you
and a very personal one.
You talked about your son last night,
yeah.
You know, last time, and, you know, with special needs. One of their cousins, because I told you they lived on, I mean, I dealt with it last week. You know, with all, I watched the game with 10 fans. I just kept my mouth shut, you know, so they wouldn't get mad. It was a bunch of radio people. And this week, Geno Smith is about 3 or 4 miles. He went to Miramar High, and they're called the Miramar High Patriots, if you can believe them.
That's a good nugget. I like that.
Yeah, well, it's the truth. And, you know, they're a classy family.
Yeah.
I met them through my friends at Dillard High, which is another famous thing mm-hmm. here, like St. Thomas Aquinas.
Yep.
You know, people like, because I know, like I said, you're so knowledgeable about Worcester. Down here, for example, Isaac Bruce's family. In fact, Dillard High has more pro players, I think 10, than any high school in the country. And St. Thomas Aquinas, obviously, Chris Carter.
They've been loaded every year, it seems, for a long, long time.
You know, and I just think that helps with the broadcast. I'm just trying to educate the public, not stick my chest out, but like Michael Irvin's, I'm just finishing that because I want to make a point about the game and the season. Michael Irvin's brother, Willie Dudley, is a very, very good friend of mine. They got 17 kids, and that's, you know, and just talking with the holidays and everything and, you know, just wishing everybody well. I guess Deion Sanders is going to start following me because me and his dad, Pops, hung out for a few years. It's crazy. It's a small world, my friend. You know what I mean? So
you are one well-connected man.
Well, look, that's why the Twitter thing's a big deal, and finally, you know, I started it. For everybody, it's at NBL Music Salerno. But as far as our guys, my attitude, Bob, is, and just listening to you and Scott and those, and then Paul is over there. You know, I'm cheating on Paul today, you know, so I preferred you today over Paul. Because Felger and Mass put me on timeout yesterday anyway. You know, he went on the air saying I'm driving him crazy. But, you know, I make my points and it's all good. But as far as the guys, here's my attitude, and correct me if I'm wrong. I think they're doing their thing. They have an I-don't-care attitude. They're being very professional. And you know what? Let's just play the games. Let's forget about the Buffalo Bills or the playoffs. Let's just play the Jets. And, you know, let's let the chips fall because you know what's at stake, Bob. If they ever get ring number 4, Brady goes into the Montana, and I give Terry Bradshaw credit. He goes into such another class. I'm not going to have to hear about ESPN being an enabler to paying Manning. It drives me crazy, Bob.
You know, by the way, I have to note, I did hear a phone call to Felger and Mass last week. And I will agree with you. And I think that's the one thing about the Patriots during Bill Belichick's tenure, among many things that stand out, obviously. But the one thing this team really does well is compartmentalize from game to game. The focus is on this game and playing well in this game, and not concerning themselves before the fact with the possibilities of what takes place after the fact, if you know what I mean. They were asked today, several players in the locker room, about the possibility of maintaining the number one seed and how important that is going into this game. And, you know, to a man, and I really think that it's more than lip service here, they say the focus is on playing the Jets and executing our game plan against the Jets. And I think people who are successful, Nick, regardless of what it is, you have to have goals. And you have those goals, and certainly you pay attention to them and check in on them periodically. But it's the process that determines whether or not you reach those goals. So for the Patriots, certainly the goal is to be the top seed in the AFC and have all the playoff games at Gillette Stadium. But they understand that in order to do that, they have to worry about the process, and that process includes the Jets game. And if they don't take care of the business on Sunday, all that other stuff is irrelevant. They've got to take care of this first step, and that's what their focus is. It's part of the process.
Well, I mean, and that's my thing. As somebody who is as old school as I am and, you know, like you say, grew up in Worcester and, you know, worked there and spent my whole life and just know the culture, where, like I told you last week, the press, the Patriots were covered as the fifth team. They were never even covered in a team with four major sports teams. So that's what I dig so much about Robert and Jonathan and Stacey James and, of course, Bill and the entire staff, that, you know what, let's have fun today. Let's do what we got to do, because the fans drive me crazy, Bob, and I know you broadcast. And in other words, I don't want to think about nothing but today or the Jets and getting through that, because I'm still bothered, Bob, because you know I deal with New Yorkers every day from watching me tweet. And I'm actually going to L.A. and New York in the next few days to do what I have to do with this couple of songs I created. It still bothers me, you know, how lucky the Giants were. 2007 and 2011 still bother me, Bob. I don't know if they bother you.
Of course they do. I mean, it's, you know, it's so funny, Nick, when we go on road trips, a lot of the time we spend, and I'm speaking of our producer on the Patriots radio network, Mark Capello and Scott Zolak, usually we have a dinner the night before at a nice restaurant, and we order our steaks and our glasses of wine, and we get set for some pretty fine dining, and then, you know, our appetite, I won't say it gets ruined, but it's certainly, it gets lessened by talk, inevitably, of what could have been. And those guys start telling stories about 2007 in particular, and the opportunity for the unbeaten season, the perfection, unprecedented, of course, for that length of a season. And, you know, it's something that is on the minds of many. From my standpoint, you know, I'm new to this job, so for me, you know, I look back on that and don't share the same perspective, because I didn't live through it with the team per se in my role, but I definitely understand why those memories are going to linger. You know, the agony of defeat, it seems for many, lingers a lot longer than the thrill of victory. And I think, at least for the athletes themselves, it's, you know, you talk to players in baseball, for example, you know, you hear so many guys who played on the Baltimore Orioles, great teams from the mid to late 60s through the 70s, Brooks Robinson and, you know, players of that ilk from that particular era of Orioles history. And as much as they relished the world championship in 1970 over the Cincinnati Reds, or when they beat the Dodgers and upset the Dodgers in 66, it's the 69 loss to the Mets that really sticks with them. Hearing Don Shula talk about the snowplow game, all the victories he had in the NFL and the Super Bowl championships and an unbeaten season, and he's still upset about the snowplow game. So, yeah, I get it. And, you know, I think this team can't erase that, but going back to Glendale, Arizona, if the Patriots could get to the Super Bowl and win that fourth Super Bowl championship with Belichick and Tom Brady, at least goes a long way toward offsetting, if not altogether, offsetting those bad memories against the Giants in 07 and 2011.
And you just made me have a flashback for all the fans out there. I think the greatest Patriot team of all time was the 76 team, and I'll never forget watching that at my family's place in Worcester, and it just drove me crazy. Remember with Sugar Ray Hamilton got caught for that bogus penalty, and that truly was an incredible team with John Hanna. And I mean, my mind is blank now. Obviously, I love Steve Grogan, and I think he's one of the greatest Patriots of all time. I just had a flashback with that.
Hey, Nick, well, I really appreciate the call. I've got a guest that we've got to get to, and I'll certainly look forward to our next opportunity to visit and your kind words. But again, happy holidays to you.
Okay, and I got you on Twitter, brother.
All right, Nick, likewise. Thanks so
bye-bye.
Much. Okay, bye-bye. All right, that's Nick Baby Love, of course, calling from Florida. And time now to visit with the Patriots' right tackle, who is with us, Sebastian Vollmer, after another day of work as the Patriots reconvene today at Gillette Stadium to get ready for the New York Jets. Sebastian, how are you?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Congratulations. 6 years in the NFL and six division championships for you since being drafted out of the University of Houston in the second round back in 2009. And I'm sure each is special in its own right, but given the circumstances of the last year for you in particular, having come off the injury that ended 2013 for you, and to work your way back as you did, and then to start the way this team did after four games and turn things around, is this especially gratifying? Is there a different dimension, an extra reward to this particular championship?
I'm not sure I can answer that quite yet, just because I think it's more like a thing where you, at the end of the career, you look back and then, you know, see what really happened and what that team was all about. Obviously, you know, we kind of moved forward pretty quickly. We enjoyed it for the day, and now obviously we're on to the Jets and finished off the season pretty strong. So, you know, I guess I'll revisit that championship at the end of my career.
When we talk about the performance of the team on Sunday in particular, one of the things that stands out to me is the lack of recognition on our broadcast, for example, of Cameron Wake and the rest of those Miami pass rushers. We didn't call their names very much, even putting pressure on Tom Brady. You guys did an outstanding job of protecting him, it seemed, in Sunday's game. How proud are you of the way, especially the second half when you guys outscored the Dolphins 27-0, but the job that you did against Wake and the Dolphins after that first meeting in Miami?
Yeah, I mean, those guys are always tough. And, you know, again, with the Jets coming up, another divisional opponent, I feel like those guys always play us tough. It doesn't really, you know, matter records or previous games, anything like that. Whoever we play in our division, it's always a tough matchup. And so, especially for the offensive line, I feel like, you know, they're all at the pass rushers. Like, we're just saying, you know, with Cam Wake and Vern and Odick and, you know, Stoggs, all those guys, they're really good. And, again, now moving forward with the Jets, you know, kind of have the same challenge upon us.
Yeah, there's no chance ever in this league, it seems, to catch your breath. It seems like every week you're answering questions about another front seven that's outstanding. And then the Jets case, of course, it's been one of the trademarks for the Jets under Rex Ryan. In addition, you mentioned being a divisional foe. Can you describe just how intense division games are compared to others because of the familiarity the two teams have with one another?
Yeah, obviously when you're in the league for a few years, your opponent, you know, tends to stay the same for a long time. And then by playing each other, you know, what, twice a year, kind of get familiar with personnel and with schemes and stuff. So I think you can't really risk falling into that trap of just assuming you know everybody. You know, instead of to put your work in and study and really prepare. Well, like you were just saying, you know, the Jets have been good up front for a while, and, you know, they have had a lot of good players. And I think it's going to be a big challenge for us, you know, to protect Tom and, you know, get the run game going, whatever it requires.
We're joined by Sebastian Vollmer. I would also imagine that the Jets will be very emotional going into that game, playing at home. It's their home finale this season. Reports in New York are that it could be Rex Ryan's final home game as the head coach of the Jets. And that aside, whether it's Rex Ryan or anybody else, when it's Jets-Patriots, it's extra intense. The games that you've played against New York, what stands out for you? What's a defining characteristic of a Jets-Patriots battle?
I feel like it's always, well, most of the time at least, it's a close game. You know, I mean, just look at, you know, the game you already played against this year. Last year was about the same, but it's always a tough battle. It, you know, it's a game for 60 minutes. It can, you know, tend to keep it close. And, you know, I feel like that was play as well, and you know, we try to do the same and hopefully be victorious at the end.
Sebastian Vollmer, last time the Patriots went on the road, you played two games at Green Bay and then at San Diego. The visit to San Diego, did that take you back in any way, at least when you've gone to San Diego in the past, to your first experience in this country playing football? You came over from Germany, played in the Global Junior Championships in San Diego. Do you relive that experience, or what do you remember about that experience, the first introduction to American football in the States?
That's a long time ago. I thought about it. That's true. I mean, it didn't stay in the same area, so it didn't look quite the same. But, yeah, I mean, it was a neat experience. It got me my public exposure to, you know, American football in the States and high competition level and all that stuff. So I really enjoyed it, and, you know, to actually stay with a guest family at that point, and, you know, they were super nice to me, and overall it was a great experience. And obviously, luckily, he won, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, hopefully continue to do that now.
Sure, you were recruited by the University of Houston moving forward from that point in time after you picked up football at a relatively late age as a teenager. Born in Dusseldorf, your hometown, is it Karst? Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah.
Karlstrom, right, near the Rhine River. Yep. Right. What turned you on to football as a teenager? How did you discover this American sport?
Well, to keep it short, I was a soccer player, like about every European boy, I would say, and I was a swimmer also. And when I got older, I'd concentrated on swimming, quit soccer. But after I was done with swimming, I really enjoyed the team sport aspect of football, or really of any team sport. But, you know, I got bigger, strong and all that stuff, so I wanted a physical challenge. And a buddy of mine took me to a local club team, and I really loved what they were all about. And, you know, I got stuck, and that's really how it happened.
And, Sebastian, the competition in Germany, American football was getting more and more exposure. How good was the quality of competition you were facing, whether it was kids like yourself who were German natives or perhaps the offspring of American servicemen from the U.S. Air Force Army bases in Germany? Did you face stiff competition, or did you really have to elevate the level of play once you came to the United States at the collegiate level?
I would say those teams, at least teams I played on, compared to a high school team. So I think they have some really good athletes, some good coaching, and so when I came to the States and played in college, I definitely had to get better. I mean, I didn't feel completely prepared, for what I was in. So it took me about a year or so to really catch on. So yeah, I definitely had to make another step. You know, still been doing it since then.
How much exposure did you have to the Patriots themselves? I mean, this was a team that was so dominant in the early part of the decade, and to Tom Brady, to Bill Belichick, and the franchise as a whole?
I remember the first football game I watched was the Super Bowl against the Rams, so that was pretty cool that I ended up here.
It's worked out so great for you, and a big reason why early in your career was your offensive line coach, Dante Scarnecchia. Can you explain the influence that he had, the impact on your career, and now what this first year has been for you post-Dante's retirement with Dave DeGuglielmo as your offensive line coach?
Yeah, I really enjoyed working with Scar, and, he was the only coach till Googs came here. I had, and, you know, I feel like he really developed me as a young player and then showed me, you know, what a pro football player is all about. And, now I'm trying to take another step with Gooch, you know, just getting to know different coaching styles and different techniques and really, you know, try to combine them and trying to do the best I can and really grow as a football player.
Our guest is Sebastian Vollmer. A couple of more minutes with the offensive lineman, right tackle for the Patriots, who Pro Football Focus today named to its All-Pro team, a ranking service evaluating and breaking down video of the NFL players, and certainly that's a compliment. You've been All-Pro in the past in 2010. You've got a couple of countrymen who are now playing in the NFL, Bjorn Werner, most notably among them from the Indianapolis Colts. Marcus Kuhn is a guy that we came across with the New York Giants in the preseason. What do you see in terms of the future of football overseas in Europe? A lot of people, of course, believe it's going to be sooner rather than later when London has an NFL franchise. Do you see eventually football growing at the grassroots level in Europe to the point where the NFL will mine more and more talent from there?
I think so. So just comparing when I first started, like people in the stands, there were maybe 150, 200 people there, mostly family members or friends. And now it really picks up. I mean, obviously nothing is as big as soccer is, but the interest is definitely there. And I feel like the media outlets are covering it more and more. And so when the NFL Europe is still there, I feel that certain cities like Dusseldorf and Frankfurt, Berlin, a lot of the German teams had a big following. And so obviously I'm not in the business world of the football operations, but, you know, as a European and as a football fan and as a player, I would, you know, love to see a team there. And I feel like that would be a good following.
Patriots have played in London in the recent past, and it figures sometime in the very near future they will play there again. How's that experience for you playing on European soil?
Oh, it was great. One, because we played at Wimbledon, which is, you know, it's a pretty significant stadium for Europeans. And, you know, it's close to home for me. My friends and family flew in. They were about an hour away. So that was great. And then, I don't know, just seeing the excitement of the people. I feel like they were cheering for everything and just really trying to learn about the game. And my dad was telling me a story that a little kid had a different jersey on, a switch at halftime just because he liked the other team better. And, you know, I feel like I really enjoy playing in front of those people, and I feel like they enjoy watching us.
Did your family come over to the States much to see you play?
They do. I wouldn't say much. They try to come maybe once, sometimes twice a year, and I try to do the same going over there. So, yeah, about once or twice.
Before I let you go with Sebastian Vollmer, I've got to ask the gratuitous soccer questions or football for those back in the homeland. How happy were you? How happy was the family with the World Cup? Can you describe what the excitement level? Because Germany had been so close so many different times in the recent past to capturing the World Cup championship, but to win it the way they did this year.
Yeah, that's right. I remember watching them, trying to get my teammates to watch it with me, and trying to get some excitement going, but most of the time I ended up, doing it by myself. But, yeah, I was really excited. I really happy for those guys. And, you know, like you were saying, they were really close for, I think, three times in a row, 12 years. And, you know, I'm glad it finally worked for them again. And, you know, it's definitely a good feeling, and I'm really happy for those guys.
And finally, at the same time, here at Gillette Stadium, of course, so much excitement created by the New England Revolution, mm-hmm. and a big reason why Jermaine Jones, of course, the German player who performed so well for the U.S. national team under a German Jurgen Klinsmann, the head coach of USA. I mean, the ascent of soccer in this country will be due in large part to people like Jermaine Jones and Jurgen Klinsmann. That's got to make you proud.
Yeah, that's great. Watching the Revolution and trying to follow them, and you know, I'm glad they made it as far as they did. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. But, like I said, soccer has always been a German mainstay. And, you know, I think they would probably kind of stay the number one sport there for a long time and probably forever. And, it's a good feeling. I feel like they're kind of spreading their wings and coming overseas and, you know, trying to, play with other people.
Well, Sebastian, if that other football continues to grow in popularity the way we expected to, certainly you'll have a big part in that. Congratulations on the division championship once again, one for every season in the NFL. All the best this weekend, and appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Sebastian Vollmer with us, and we shift from a New England Patriot, of course, the starting right tackle of the Pats, to a very busy man in broadcasting circles working San Diego State and Cincinnati tonight on a college basketball telecast for ESPN. And, of course, he'll be the voice of the Jets on radio, my counterpart this Sunday at 1 o'clock at MetLife Stadium. He's Bob Wischusen, longtime voice of the Jets, and you can follow him on Twitter at ESPN Bob. And, Bob, appreciate the time. I know it's difficult in your travels to spare a few minutes, so it's good to have you with us. Thanks so much.
No worries.
And let me ask you, speaking of all the travels, I mean, how do you navigate the schedule? Because you've done so many games on the West Coast this year. At least when I've watched college football, it seems like you're out in the Pacific time zone, and there you are the next day calling the Jets on the East Coast.
I guess that's why God invented the red eye. To get back and have checkable travel. So, yeah, we did have a couple of Pac-12 games this year, but, you know, college football is fun, so it's worth it.
Well, the season hasn't been so fun, certainly for the team that you cover in the NFL, the Jets, but you had a good one, at least a good outcome on Sunday over the Tennessee Titans, 16-11. And I want to ask about the post-game scene in the locker room. DeBrickashaw Ferguson giving the game ball to Rex Ryan, Rex then turning the ball over to his ailing father, Buddy. Woody Johnson there, the reports in New York regarding Rex's future. What's the latest in your view? Was that one of the final three games for Rex? Will Sunday be his final home game as the head coach of the New York Jets?
I would imagine so. Four straight years out of the playoffs and, you know, the year that they've had this season. But, you know, I think the football people, when they turn the film on, see that Rex has been dealt a tough hand. He's never had a consistent quarterback. He's had two rookie quarterbacks begin their careers, with him. So he's never had an experienced quarterback. And, they were thin in the secondary to start the season and then decimated by injuries. So, you know, I heard Jeff Van Gundy say this one time, and I think it's 100% true, that especially in pro sports, oftentimes organizations fire coaches to give fans and the media the illusion that true change is happening, when really true change is when you change your roster. And I don't know who's going to be making the decisions for them this coming offseason in terms of, you know, picking players and signing contracts. But, I mean, you know, you would be delusional to think that they're going to come in here and look at the Jet roster and go, oh, that's just the roster I want to go into next season with. So, you know, to hang it on Rex, I mean, he's going to lose his job most likely, but, he was dealt a tough hand this year.
Well, speaking of the guy who picks players now, one of the chief criticisms of his boss, John Idzik, is that he had never picked players in the past, had worked really in the business side of things, although the son of a coach, while with the Seattle Seahawks, his role wasn't necessarily as a personnel decision maker in terms of selecting guys in the draft or going out and acquiring players through free agency. How hot is the seat for John Idzik right now? He's relatively young in his tenure as a Jets executive, but certainly the pressure seems to be increasing on him as one looks at it from afar.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, we all know how it works in pro sports. When you have seasons like this, no one rests easy. Normally, and especially in a market like New York, where it is always, what have you done for me lately? You know, I mean, fans and media demand success. And if you don't succeed, then everyone's kind of quote-unquote on the hot seat. Unless it's your first year and you're kind of taking over a rebuilding project from someone else. But, you know, last year the Jets went 8-8. So to have the kind of season they're having this year is a major step back. And in terms of John Idzik, you know, I've always said all along that fundamentally how he believes a team should be built, I think, is the right way. He came from the Seattle model, and obviously we've seen the success the Seahawks have had, but the Seattle model is draft. Build your team, and then when you get to the point where you have analyzed what the draft has given you, now I know where I need to add via free agency, and you kind of supplement your roster with reasonable free agent dollars, and but you don't go out and just, you know, throw all of your available cap space everywhere and wherever the money lands, just bring me players. You know, there are teams that have done that, and usually without success. You know, the free spending teams, the Eagles a couple of years ago, and Vince Young was talking about the dream team, and, you know, the Redskins we've seen throw money around, I mean, a ton of free agents in Oakland. It doesn't usually work. So I think John's basic philosophy of how to build a team is the right way to go, but it's all predicated upon drafting well. And they've had two drafts, which I think have produced 20 total players. You know, they had 12 draft choices last year. And out of those 20 players, the only real impact player is Sheldon Richardson. Some of the other guys have been hurt. Some of them have been disappointing. Some of them are still learning. But, you know, you can see now what the on-the-field product is when you draft that many players and there's only one guy that really has excelled so far. So, you know, philosophically, I think he's right, but you have to draft well to make the strategy stand up.
One of those picks, Geno Smith, of course, last year taken the second round with the Jets pick at quarterback. And with Bob Schusen, voice of ESPN College Football and Basketball and the Jets on radio, in your travels, considering where the Jets are likely to draft this year, because Marcus Mariota, as the Heisman Trophy winner, would be off the board now after the Jets' third win, if all goes as expected. Bob, do you see other quarterback options out there who would be better served as the Jets' QB of the future, or does Geno Smith still have a future with this team?
Well, and again, it all depends on where they end up drafting, A. And B, it all depends upon what, I don't know who's going to be making the decisions next season. It's all speculative as to what they would think of Geno Smith and what they would think of quarterbacks at the top of the draft. But if it were me, and if, you know, somehow in fantasy land I got hired, Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston, I would both project to be better quarterbacks than Geno Smith, and maybe by a long shot. So Jameis Winston obviously comes with plenty of, you know, quote-unquote baggage that you would have to vet the heck out of to determine whether or not you think he can do this in New York especially. But there's no question that once he gets on the field, he's going to be an NFL player. And I think Marcus Mariota is going to be a special NFL player. The Jets will be in a position, if you're a Jets fan, what you have to hope for, and the tiebreakers doesn't look like it's going to go your way. What you have to hope for is Jacksonville gets the first overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you weren't going to get the first overall pick, and Jacksonville gets it, Jacksonville will then turn to the rest of the top five or six, most of which will need a quarterback, and they'll say, okay, guys, the window's open. Who wants to come make us an offer? Because they took Blake Bortles second last year. So to me, they're the one team that you know is not taking a quarterback at the top of this draft. If Tennessee gets the pick, if I'm assuming Tampa Bay, you know, even Oakland. Those teams need quarterbacks. I'm not even sold that if Oakland had the top pick, they wouldn't use it to take Marcus Mariota and trade Carr, because I think Mariota's going to be that special. And the Jets, obviously. So even the Redskins. The future with RG3 is way up in the air, and, you know, they're a three-win team. So there's plenty of teams towards the top of the draft that need a quarterback. That's why, if you get a couple of really quarterback-needy teams that end up 1-2, and Jacksonville ends up with, say, the third or fourth pick, then the Jets could be in trouble because you may not be able to access those top picks. I don't know what offer you'd ever make to a quarterback-needy team to move up and get one of those two guys. But if Jacksonville ends up with the first or second pick, at least there would be somebody there to do business with. But they're not going to get it themselves. And right now they project sixth, I believe. I don't think they can probably do better than getting in the top five. And I think both of those guys will be off the board. And I think if everybody just sits where they are, there'll be enough teams in the top five that need a quarterback that by the time you get to fourth or fifth, I think Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota will both be taken.
Bob Wischusen of the Jets radio team, our guest. And, Bob, let's talk about the game on Sunday. And the Jets certainly come into this game, I would have to think, very confident against the Patriots in that they've beaten New England as recently as last year, that they were in position to beat the Patriots earlier this season. The formula that the Jets used in Game 1 this year certainly would be a blueprint for victory once again this week. Heavy on the run game. Chris Ivory has run it so well the last two meetings of these teams. Geno, for various reasons, has played well against the Patriots in the last two games between these teams. And now you've got Percy Harvin, who's a dynamic player on offense and in special teams. What do you make of this matchup in round two of the Jets and the Patriots this year?
Well, the Jets with Geno Smith at quarterback, I mean, for the most part, their recipe for success is almost irrelevant to the opponent. Obviously, the Patriots are right now, if not the best team in the AFC, certainly one of the top two and arguably, you know, top three, top four team in the league. But the Jets would play the same way against Tennessee again if it were them playing on Sunday. It's run the ball, play action every now and then, you know, some jet sweep and end-around stuff to get some of their speedy players the ball in space, but to try and make sure that Geno Smith is not going, that his effect on the game is minimized, because that gives him the best chance to win. So, yeah, I mean, I would think that their attitude would be, let's just come out and try to be the more physical team again. They were certainly the more physical team when they played up in New England, but teams change as the year goes on. That's not the same Patriot team now as it was back in the first month of the season. I mean, they've improved tremendously. You know, and the Jets, obviously, having lost as many games as they've lost, don't have nearly the same confidence that they had when they went up there at the start of the season, where there was still a lot of promise, and who knows what could happen. You know, now you're on your way to potentially a 13-loss season. I can't imagine that the locker room is oozing with confidence. But what the one theme I know that they will rally around is Rex, that this is probably his final home game. And in his first home game as the head coach, they beat New England back in 2009. And if this is his last home game and they beat New England on his way out, that'd be a great way to send him off. But, you know, I don't know if they go into this game swollen with confidence. I think that they would.
I guess just confident in the matchup, them knowing that they matched up well with the Pats in the first game this year, and probably feel that they left a lot of points on the field in that particular game, settling for so many field goals, and that the defense was able to keep Brady and company off the field with a string of three and outs and dominate the time of possession the way they did in that particular game, that they can execute the game plan to the point where they can put themselves in position to win the game.
Possible, and I mean that theme of getting three and not seven in the red zone has dogged them the whole season. And that's been all year. 2 weeks ago, they got to overtime in a game in Minnesota and lost in overtime. And they had five trips into the red zone and a sixth trip where I believe they got to the 26-yard line. So six offensive possessions, 26-yard line were in, and they kicked five field goals and had a fumble. So when the field shrinks, they struggle. They can move the ball between the 20s, and they've been able to run it. But when the field shrinks and teams get a little more aggressive putting guys in the box, you know, it's they've really had a tough time getting the ball in the end zone. That's been their problem all year. And if the Patriots just play good red zone defense in this game, the Jets will have a very difficult time beating them, because Tom Brady gets 7 and not 3. And that's what he does. When he gets in the red zone, the ball's going to get in the end zone more often than not. When the Jets have had the ball in the red zone this year, it's been a field goal more often than not.
Jets secondary any better than it was early in the year? Has there been any improvement there?
There's been some. Calvin Pryor's gotten a little better as the year's gone on, and they have a couple of corners, young corners, that they basically picked up off the scrap heap that have developed and been pretty good. A kid named Marcus Williams, who, you know, was just an add-on to the roster about midway through the season and has practiced well. And just based on practicing well, like high school football with the Jets in the secondary, whoever practices well on Wednesday and Thursday gets to start on Sunday. And he's held on to that starting job. But by and large, if you use the Jets in a vacuum with how bad their secondary was to start the season and really how rough it's been all year with Dean Milliner getting hurt a couple of times on injured reserve, has never had a chance really to play this year. You know, the other cornerback that they drafted, Dexter McDougal, in the third round, got hurt in training camp and was put on IR, I think with a torn ACL, back in August. So their top two corners, they never really even had a chance to get on the field. And if you, you know, so their jumping off point was so low that, yes, it's gotten a little better, but if you compare the Jets with the rest of the NFL, I mean, they've got a bottom three secondary. You know, their secondary players are, you know, I mean, if the Jets released all of the players in their secondary tomorrow, I'm not sure how many guys would get picked up, because they've struggled to put bodies back there throughout the season. So, you know, I don't know how they'll attack Tom Brady, but to blitz him would be very difficult, because you're going to be leaving some very ill-suited players out there on an island if you go after him.
And we'll end on that note. How much has Rex had to hold back this year with his aggressive nature and restrain himself because of that very fact?
Well, the one game that they went into where their attitude was, you know what, rather than die a slow death, let's see if we can make some plays. Let's see if we can pressure a quarterback. Let's just zero blitz like the good old days with Darrell Revis and Antonio Cromartie at corner. And let's see if maybe we can gamble a little bit and get after a quarterback and get in his face, see if we can get a couple of takeaways. That was their strategy in San Diego. And if you look at the final score of their game in San Diego, then you'll realize why they really haven't done that at any other point since. So, yeah, I mean, his secondary lack of talent severely hamstrings his ability to play the way he wants to play. Just, you know, you can't be aggressive the way that New England can in this game. Because if New England wants to basically eliminate Percy Harvin from the down-the-field throwing game plan, well, you take Darrell Revis and put him on Percy Harvin, and that's it. And Percy Harvin won't have an impact on the game. You have to give it to him in an end around to get the ball in his hands. The Jets don't have the ability to do that. They don't have players that can lock you down like that.
Bob, certainly appreciate your time today. Look forward to seeing you on Sunday at MetLife Stadium. And I know the Jets have had a difficult year, but appreciate your insight today about it. And one still expects, at least from New England, a very good game to watch. Very, I think, tight game. At least that's the way the Patriots are looking at it. They don't expect anything different.
Okay, Bob. Thanks.
Appreciate All right. Take care. Safe travels as well. Thanks so much for your time. Okay, Bob Wischusen, voice of the Jets, on the road with ESPN, calling college basketball and football. And again, the Jets and the Patriots Sunday at 1 o'clock with their kickoff from MetLife Stadium. Coming up, we'll have more second hour, of course. So we'll talk with Sean Stiletto, who is an agent for a number of NFL players, including a couple of Patriots, but also the author of a book, No Backing Down, about the 1994 Salem High School football team. And really a great story in terms of a coach having an impact on young people and continuing to be an educator even while teachers were on strike in that situation, and the impact that he had on the lives of his players and Sean in particular. And we'll also talk a little bit about the business side of what he does as well when it comes to prospecting potential NFL talent. We'll continue with more. Big Al, I know you've been holding for a long time down in Valdosta, Georgia. We'll try to get to you as soon as we can as well. But first, we've got to take time out on the Bob Soucy Show here from our Subway Fresh broadcast studios inside Gillette Stadium on Patriots.com radio.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No. Pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Want to split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument of flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. Three Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Have a question for the voice of the Patriots?
Shotgun snap against the four-man rush. Plenty of time to throw toward Gronkowski. Makes the grab left seat. Stiff arms the defender at the 25. Set free at the 20. Drive to the 15-10. Angling right to the 5. Gronkowski dives to the goal line. His third touchdown for the Patriots.
Call him on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email him at webradio@patriots.com. Now, back to the Bob Soucy Show.
And we welcome you back to our Subway Fresh broadcast studios. And with us now is Sean Stellato, who's a player agent in the NFL, former professional football player, and a collegiate two-sport athlete. He was a very good student as well at Marist College in upstate New York, but hails from Salem, Massachusetts, and has written a couple of books that we're going to delve into, at least the second of which was recently published, entitled No Backing Down. It's the story of the 1994 Salem High School football team. And please welcome Sean Stellato, and you can follow him on Twitter at Sean Stellato. And Sean, I know you've been a busy man. I just got back from a road trip. You've been traveling around the country recruiting future clients and evaluating college prospects as well. So appreciate a few minutes with you.
Your time, exciting time of the year right now to be an agent and have guys playing in the National Football League, but it is grind time, and I have been just got off a 9-day road trip, so it's good to be back. I can finally watch some Christmas movies.
We got a couple of those players with the Patriots. One of them scored another touchdown, the fourth of his career, and the second on a blocked field goal against the Miami Dolphins on Sunday. When you watch a guy like Kyle Arrington and your other clients perform well, and you see that kind of a play, is the excitement, the gratification you get as their representative comparable to the feeling you used to have, an athlete yourself, when you did something comparable on the high school or collegiate fields or even the pro arena?
It really does. I've taken the baton as far as I could go as a player, and now to see any of your clients with success and going further than you did, it's gratifying. It's a feel good feeling, and especially guys that are good kids and work very, very hard. So it definitely resonates in a special way, and you just want them obviously to have continued success and be able to do what they love and play as long as they can and have a chance to win a Super Bowl.
We'll talk a little bit more about your current role and the whole process of recruiting talent, and at least to helping guys prepare for the draft, something you have to do as a player representative. But I want to go back to the 1994 high school football season for you, the second of your two books, and the first being Fourth and Long, The Odds. The second is No Backing Down, and as noted, it's the story that you lived in 1994, the Salem High School football team. There was a teacher's strike. Your coach, Ken Perrone, longtime coach, very successful coach, was determined to continue to coach his team. Take us back to that particular year. What were the circumstances that engulfed that team and Ken Perrone?
I'll tell you, intuitively, I always felt it's a remarkable story because it was true. As we are privy to, high school football coaches do it strictly for the love of the game, and it's their passion. And without high school football, good high school football coaches, I'm sure, guys that kind of mold young men, boys into men, and have a chance to play, at the next level and get to the NFL. I'm sure a lot of players go back in reference to their high school football career. That year, when I say extremely colorful, diverse, colorful characters, Coach Perrone was a legendary coach. Backdrop Halloween, Salem, Mass. We're undefeated in conference, getting ready to play Swamp Scott, whose quarterback was Todd McShay. They were undefeated in all of a sudden you got a major teacher strike, and the coach had two contracts, one as a teacher, one as a coach. He gets blessed by the union to go across the picket line to coach those kids, and the administration comes out and says, if you coach, we're going to terminate you. And sure enough, things really revved up. It was the heart of the lockout for hockey and Major League Baseball strike. And we were young teenagers caught in a game of chess, as Mike Lynch said, and almost pawns in their scheme. And Coach put everything, 37 years of coaching, on the line for us. And obviously it's a testament to his him as a person, his ability to coach, and his staff. And sure enough, we what Adam Schefter said, we kind of found a way in football immortality, and We were the National Game of the Week on Sports Channel. He did get issued a cease and desist before that game. Our superintendent came out and compared him to Jim Jones and David Koresh of starting a football cult, which was completely false. And when I say miraculous wins, Bob, it was almost surreal. And you know, having success now as an agent, and I go back in reference to that that time period. And it all started then when I operated, you know, it's primary source experience. I'm not operating from speculation. And, you know, being privy and being part of a journey like that and growing up at such a young age when we're getting, you know, all we want to do is play football and live out our high school and our boyhood dream and have a chance to do it. Not a lot of teams get to do is play in a Super Bowl, and that was on the brink of getting stripped from us.
You lost in the regional Super Bowl after an unbeaten season, and as you noted, in violation of the cease and desist order, Coach Perrone was fired. He had a 151, 62-8 record as the coach. He would go on to coach college baseball at Salem State for many years, but nonetheless, his reward for continuing to educate his kids. It's the great irony to me is that while the teachers were on strike, here was someone who was continuing his role as an educator and being a positive influence on kids.
Yeah, he was, Bob. Education and, you know, student-athlete first. And I know he has affected many, many lives through the years. Coached baseball at Salem State for 30 years. His 1970 team up in Brewer, Maine, was ranked fifth in the nation undefeated. And he came to Salem. Not only did he build a football program, he built a community. He put the pride in the game. He made you want to wear the red and black. And, you know, it was just it was such an amazing time for the 22 years he was here. And I remember, it was my dream as a kid to play for him. And unfortunately, my senior year, you know, he wasn't around. But that junior year is something I'll cherish forever. And a lot of my teammates will. And, you know, when I say miraculous wins, it's we were the National Game of the Week on Sports Channel 2 back in 94 against Swampscott. Played in front of over 12,000 people. But everything was kind of reaffirmed by who's endorsed the book, you know, with Doug Flutie doing the forward and Mike Dicker and, you know, Adam Schefter and, you know, Michael Ruzioni. So those are people I've looked up to as a kid, and having them, you know, endorsing it meant a lot as well. Kind of was my Super Bowl victory.
Well, you mentioned Doug, and he did write the forward as noted. How did you get Doug Flutie involved in the process? And it also strikes me that, you know, who better to write the forward than this quarterback who is again one of the great success stories in New England history when it comes to college athletics and high school athletics from Natick.
Yeah, Doug's someone, Bob, that I really respected and try to emulate as a kid. Nothing but respect and admiration for what he did for the game of football, especially for athletes that were small in stature like myself, paving the way and really making me dream big. And it was very, you know, it was almost overwhelming when he, you know, agreed to do the forward. And I think him being from, you know, Natick and being overlooked by a lot of schools and the career he's had, you know, where not much has ever been handed to him, I think there was some synergies. But, yeah, it was definitely having him do the forward was just it was amazing. And I'm very grateful for that. And hopefully this can get to the big screen someday, and if you're going to put, you know, high school football in Massachusetts even more on the map, because we've got a ton of tradition up here with Thanksgiving football and a lot of fashion as well.
Yeah, we're talking with Sean Stellato, and the Super Bowls, of course, are held now at Gillette Stadium and were held not too long ago. And for kids who go on and play, high school football is part of that process. You yourself played collegiately, as noted. You were both a basketball and a football player and an academic all-conference standout at Marist, but so many kids, their best sports memories, their final sports memories are in high school. What do you hear from the guys you played with who ended their athletic careers with that last football game, and what kind of an influence has Ken Perrone in particular had on their lives as husbands, as fathers, as business people, or whatever their endeavor is in life?
You know, I think when it comes at the end of the day, when things get tough, you count on your family. That's who you turn to. Coach Perrone taught us, you know, in terms of the values of hard work and camaraderie and chemistry and sticking together and never back down. You know, if adversity comes knocking, you know, don't let it overtake you. And I think a lot of my former teammates, the reviews, the feedback was kind of overwhelming. I was blessed to be able to play over 20 years of football and being able to do something every day. I'm sure you can attest to, Bob, when you wake up, you get up with a little hop in your step, and it makes your heart beat just a little bit hotter because you're so passionate what you're doing. And I think a lot of these kids felt that everyone wants to leave a legacy in this lifetime. And a lot of these kids came from dire circumstances to get to this point in their journey and to be able to have some success. I think it's pretty neat that their kids and grandkids and, you know, going to get to, you know and understand what they were all about and what they went through to battle to get to that point and how they never backed down. But Coach Brown, someone I had the utmost respect for, even to this day we were close. You know, he was much ahead of his time. I always reference to Coach Brown as the first generation Bill Belichick, from someone that not only a winner, that is, you know, prepared like no other, passionate, and you know, wants to win, and you know, is a leader, and you know, all the vital elements that you know, show why the game of football is so important for so many people's lives and what it brings and how it structures and molds you. And that's what he was all about.
Mentioned the name of Todd McShay. Of course, he's one of the foremost draft evaluators on television and I should say online, but I'll use the phrase in print, of course, as an ESPN reporter and somebody who, along with Mel Kiper Jr., is very prominent on television around the time of the draft. I imagine you cross paths with Todd quite a bit. Do you guys rekindle memories of your high school days?
You know what? It's not really. That was an interesting game. You know, we came in with so much hype that day, and, you know, we ended up winning that game. And, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, obviously, you know, something he wants to talk about, but Todd was a good football player. You know, he's very, you know, obviously successful what he's doing now. But I'm sure, you know, that season was quite a memory for him as well.
And, Sean, just to point out, too, in your book, you did reach out to the former superintendent to get his side of the story. So you did make an attempt not only to write from your perspective and that of a player as a junior quarterback on the Salem High School team back in 1994, but you were willing to hear the other side as well.
Yeah, you know, I wrote the book very objectively and try to really get as much. I did over 1,000 hours of interview, and I really wanted to get everyone to kind of speak, whether it was closure, whether it was therapeutic. Unfortunately, he did not want to speak. And, you know, it's too bad, but I think, you know, the reader has enough input from several interviews where they can kind of make a decision who was in the wrong, who was in the right, and the type of story it is. But, yeah, that was unfortunate. He did not want to speak. Maybe at some point in the future, but as of to date, it's a no.
The book, again, is No Backing Down from Sean Stellato. So how do you go from being a guy trying to latch on in the Arena Football League and continue a playing career to being someone who represents players in the National Football League as their agent?
Yeah, you know, it's very I took it as far as I could as a player, and I had a couple agents I hired and fired. I felt it was a big void for personal attention. You know, my kids asked me, Daddy, what's work like? Can you tell us about it? And I said, hey, you know, when we go in the Tower of Terror, it's up and down. But it is the passion. I've been blessed to be able to represent outstanding high-character young men with a very unique skill set. And I think it's definitely something that's a very interesting line of work. I think, you know, when you hear sports agent, there's some certain stigmas that come out. But at the end of the day, and having the chance to obviously negotiate with the Patriots and have players there through the last several years, and them being my, you know, boyhood, one of my favorite teams, it's pretty refreshing. But it's a great line of work. Very passionate about it, and you know, hopefully I'm going to be able to have longevity in this game, because I really think there's a need for the type of skill set that I have in terms of representing these young men, which they need. And in terms of being balanced, Bob's important, because if you got, you know, clients in several markets, and, you know, especially guys now that, you know, with future workouts coming up and future considerations happening next month, I got some free agents trying to get some work. So, and then obviously service the current, and then the recruiting process right now is, you know, I just got off, met with some tough prospects, and had a verbal from one, which I'm excited about. And, And hopefully the teams will have players can continue to play well and win, and we can get to Arizona watching some of these guys have a chance to win a world championship.
Well, that certainly would be something we'd all enjoy. You know, it's interesting to me, and I mean this with all due respect, your clients, at least with the Patriots and some of the other names that I've seen on the list, are guys that were really long shots. Kyle Arrington out of Hofstra, a school that doesn't even have a football team anymore, and was on a couple of different teams' practice squads and, of course, found his home with New England. Joe Villano is a guy undrafted out of Maryland, despite his status, a pretty well-decorated collegiate player, but maybe a bit undersized at his position on the defensive line in the eyes of some evaluators. Guys like that, Sean, how do you put them on the radar? What are the steps that you take with clients like that? And we're not talking about the guys that are first, second round, third round talents, but the guys that, you know, maybe have some talent that's pro ready or have a skill set that meets a lot of pro criteria, but not all the pro criteria. How do you get those guys to capture the attention and interest of NFL teams?
And those are great points, Bob. Because you know, this I look at you have the upper echelon of Tom Brady and Manning and some of these, you know, some of these big time players that are first round. Obviously Brady, we know his, you know, school was a sixth round pick, but there's 1,696 active NFL players. There's about 250 practice squad. So looking at the statistics, it is very, you know, it's nearly impossible to play in the National Football League. I think, but there are such a need for guys that have, you know, kind of that unique skill set. Guys that have that refuse to lose attitude, and guys that do the dirty work. You know, it, you know, whether it's sticking on special teams. You know, my outside linebacker, special teams player who's alternate for the Pro Bowl in 2012, Brian Braman with the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brian was out of football. You know, his story is so incredible. But I really, it's grit. It's really just pounding the pavement. It's trying to brand them organically in a light. Where you can kind of differentiate something that they bring to the table that maybe might have been overlooked and they've fallen through the cracks a little bit. But it is an opinion-based business, and I think we see it every year. An undrafted player comes out of nowhere, and next thing you know, he's playing, and then he's starting, and then, you know, he's continued to climb that ladder. So I just, you know, you just never know. You know, I think having a, you know, some sort of intellect and a football IQ, I can, you know, I understand talent. And, you know, I always took film study very important as a player, and I take it very important now as an agent. And I take a lot of it personal too when teams are, when you're trying to brand a kid, oh, he's missing this or that, it's going to be a long shot. And I'm just like, are you inside of him? Are you, you know, do you know the road he's traveled? You know, just be curious. Don't be judgmental. And, I think, you know, every year you see those types of guys, and I've obviously had success with a lot of, you know, undrafted players because I think we kind of all, you know, share that that no backing down, chip on the shoulder mentality, refuse to lose, and really, you know, it's not where you're from, it's how you come, and, you know, playing at a Subdivision I school, I think even I know more is, you know, Terrence, the day the first Marist player drafted, and, you know, it's a testament to him. He went after it, and you know, there was always obviously a question of the level of competition he was playing against. But you're talking about a kid that really built himself into a football player as he prepped for the draft, and now he's having a decent rookie year with the Dolphins.
With Sean Stellato, our final minute or two with the player agent, who again has the book No Backing Down out, and it's certainly a worth the time to explore the 1994 Salem High School football story chronicled in it. But Sean, this time of the year, as you've mentioned, you're on the road recruiting prospects and guys that want to go from the college level to the NFL. And it seems as though there are so many different sports performance centers now around the country. What do you do as an agent to try to guide them to the right one? And what steps do they take to ensure that they're at their best when it comes to the measurements in the NFL scouting combine or the regional combine so that they can get a serious look from NFL teams?
I think, you know, now with everything that's been going on with the league, you know, with the domestic violence and the child abuse and the scrutiny that's been on it, I think it's very important now you're going to see even more character issues being under the microscope. And I think, what you know, in terms of a lot of these players, it's really refurbishing your craft and really focusing on your weaknesses, and you know, if you can be, you know, a lot of these kids, it's so they're vanilla and you've got everyone coming at you. You know, I'm a finalist for one of the top running backs in this year's draft, and I mean, the stories are just insane. But I think where it really comes down to is being honest and upfront. And you know, I think everyone at some point gets a lot of lip service. I just think in terms of telling them, hey, this is kind of the path that other guys have navigated through. You know, the template is intact; it works. You don't have to, alter your course. And I think that and really developing, a game plan, something that's going to take them and hold their hand from whether they're after their college bowl game to an all-star game, you know, right up to the NFL combine, to their pro day, to team visits, and right to Chicago on April 30th to May 2nd of 2015. And it's going to be an interesting next few weeks on a lot of things, whether, signing some of these rookies and, seeing some of these veterans, play out the rest of the season and hopefully have, as much success as they can and play well.
And lastly, between now and the draft coming up in late April, early May in Chicago, as you noted, how many days are you going to be on the road?
You know what? I'll probably be on the road from January 30th, January 10th, January 9th through the Super Bowl, which is going to be a lot. But I got a week in front of me now to kind of, really put their head down and continue to try to promote some of these guys that are free agents and service the veterans. But the road can be, at times it's fun, and as you know, at other times it gets, you miss the family.
But no doubt
about it. End of the day, they know I'm out there, my clients know I'm out there, that I'm putting their interests above my own, and we're, trying to monetize as much as we can and create some areas where they can, have a brand built for when they're done playing football that can, assist them in the next transition, whether it's broadcasting, coaching, or, owning their own business, et cetera.
Well, Sean, I hope we see you in Glendale on the 1st of February, and you're watching Kyle Arrington in the Super Bowl. But I appreciate your time today. Happy holidays, safe travels. And, again, the book is No Backing Down, and it will make a great stocking stuffer.
I'd like nothing more than that, having a long-standing relationship with Kyle, and I wish him the best. And obviously, Joey's fighting to get back on the field. We're excited, where we're at right now. But I think it's gonna get interesting. So we know Rex is gonna bring his A game on Sunday. But you gotta love those rivalries anyway. Throughout the record, it's kind of like Thanksgiving football.
You bet, Sean. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it, Bob. Be well.
All right, you too. Sean Stellato, of course, the author of No Backing Down, story of the 1994 Salem High football team, and as well a player agent in the NFL. And joining us now is Jackie Britton, a favorite daughter of Georgia. And online is Big Al from Valdosta, Georgia. And Al, you've been waiting for so long. He's been online, Jackie. He's been on hold for almost a full hour, 48 minutes and counting.
Oh, really?
And Big Al called in last week. And he is standing by with phone in hand, and I thought, it would be great to have two Georgians.
Hey, I love it.
Telephonically.
Yes.
Fantastic. Go Dogs.
Go whoop, Dogs. Whoop, whoop. Woo, preach it. Stop it,
although,
Kevin.
Jackie, nothing personal, but, I'm kind of a little bit closer to Valdosta State University Blazers than, I am to Athens, so.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. I mean, the point is the whole state gets behind the Georgia Bulldogs.
Exactly.
That's the point.
Valdosta, Georgia, you were talking a second ago, Bob, about high school football there and the issues that they had with, I guess there was a, somebody was had a contract as a teacher and a contract as a coach, and how do you reconcile that, and there's a strike and all that. Do you have any idea, Bob? Just take a guess. Maybe Jackie, this'll ring true with Jackie as well. Take a guess as to what the head football coach here at Valdosta High School makes on an annual basis.
Man, I don't know. But I remember going down there for a football game in high school, and it's just unreal. I mean, I'm scared. I'm awful at numbers anyway, but
take a shot. Nobody's going to sue you. Just take a shot.
I mean, high school football, I mean, is it north of 600,000?
No,
Okay.
You know, that's, although, you know, your intentions are good. That's a little too generous. Even
a little too high. Okay.
Well, let's put it this way. The high school football coach is making a lot more money than the high school algebra teacher.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
$125K.
Well, nice work if you can get it.
There you go. Without having to teach a thing. $125K.
That doesn't really surprise me, though.
And I guess the cost of living in Valdosta is a little bit less than it is in Boston,
you're guessing right, yeah.
You can construct the Taj Mahal for $250,000.
Yeah. I think pretty much anywhere is less than the cost of living than
there
it
you
is
go.
Here.
I mean, I'm a retired Air Force major, and I teach part-time, and I'm not saying I'm living like Donald Trump, but... Yeah, I'm not exactly starving either.
Well, Big Al, I'm sure, though, too, you know, at Valdosta High, I'm sure the pressure is just a little bit less than the pressure is on Mark Richt or Paul Johnson at Georgia Tech, so, or the coach at Valdosta State, whoever he is. Hey, let me ask you, what's your question for Jackie and Bob on the Patriots?
Well, listen, I just don't check in, of course, like I like to call you Bob. I think you got a great show. And
I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you.
I think, you know, you were talking earlier with that guy about Rex Ryan. And one thing about him, I mean, we don't really have to understand it or agree with it very much, but they play hard for that coach. They play hard for Rex Ryan. And I think they'll probably keep it close till halftime, kind of like the Dolphins did Sunday, and we might stretch it out in the second half like we did Sunday. But, you know, the thing about Ryan, they do play hard. The flip side for him is, I really find it difficult to give a coach like Rex Ryan a pass for the fact that he hasn't had the, quote, elite quarterback. I don't know that he really wants to have an elite quarterback. I think he's one of these guys that, you know, that really doesn't trust the quarterback position. You know, like my quarterback can lose the game for me as much as he can win the game. And so I don't really – it's hard for me to give him – too much of a break on the fact that he hasn't had the elite quarterback. I think that he's one of these guys that thinks that he can win on defense. And if they get a couple guys hurt on defense and then they can't win on defense, they don't have the offense to fall back on. And so, you know, then you have the results like you have this year and I guess previous years as well.
Well, I think to your point, you go back to Mark Sanchez's struggles with the Jets. And he had the wristband with the plays on them, and of course there was a system the Jets had put in place for him. In certain situations, he had to be more cautious with his throws, more conservative with his decision making. It was actually a part of the play wristband that he had. I think that there might have even been a color code like red, green, and yellow. To me, you know, when a quarterback is on the field in the NFL, certainly there are things you do from a game planning standpoint to try to take some of the pressure off or to at least manage the game for him a bit. But nonetheless, you know, it's hard for a professional athlete. It's hard to win in the NFL if you go out on the field and you feel that, you know, there's not full confidence, full trust in you, in particular at the most important position, arguably, in all of sports. And also the fact that the Jets have had several different offensive coordinators. Now, some of that may not have been Rex's call, but they went from Brian Schottenheimer to Tony Sperano, and that was a mess. And then, of course, this year, Marty Morningweg is now in his second year as the offensive coordinator for the Jets. So, and there's also been a lot of turnover on his offensive staff. So his defensive staff, for the most part, stayed intact for a while. But it was interesting to me when Mike Pettine left for what might have been viewed a lateral job. Now, maybe he wanted to be free of Rex and really be his own master of his defense when he became defensive coordinator for the Bills, and ultimately that led to the head coaching position for Cleveland. But I do think there is something to be said for stability within an organization on a coaching staff if that coach has the decision-making authority. Now, Rex may not have had that in the last year or so with John Idzik as the general manager, but certainly there was a lot of turnover even several years ago on his offensive staff, it seemed to me. And beyond that, playing hard doesn't always translate into playing well, and the Jets have been guilty of a lot of penalties. Now, granted, the Patriots have gotten through a lot of penalties this year, and it hasn't come back to hurt them, and it's a little bit of a hypocritical statement to say, well, the Jets aren't a well-coached team because of all the penalties they've had during Rex's tenure when the Pats have been penalized so much this year. But I think it's been a constant.
We've had more than we normally have this year.
But I do think it speaks to a certain volatility, and I think Rex Ryan is a tremendous defensive coach, but overall I think that, you know, when you look at the body of his work, started very strong. There were a lot of things that you can certainly question about the way Rex managed the team on the field and off the field. Jackie, what are your thoughts? I mean, you've watched Rex Ryan the last couple of years. The Jets and the Pats are close.
What do you got?
What is the question about?
Rex Ryan as a coach, and in particular, you know,
no, I missed the debate earlier, so I was like trying to play catch up.
Well, we were talking a little bit about, I think Al's statement about developing a quarterback, and I brought up the fact.
Yeah, I'm not giving him a pass because he hasn't had a quarterback. I don't think he wants one.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly professed the ground and pound.
I feel like he's always trying out quarterbacks. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't say I don't think he doesn't want one.
Yeah, I think he understands. I mean, when you hear him talk about Brady and Manning, certainly, Al, I mean, there's no doubt about it. He would love to coach one of those guys, unquestionably. And we'll see what happens after this year, because there are a lot of rumors about his future, if indeed he's fired.
Right.
That he could wind up in Atlanta, for example, Matt Ryan. And I'm certain he would welcome that.
Well,
so.
We shall see. Anyway, looking ahead to this Sunday, I think that this is really breaking well for us in terms of the schedule.
Yeah,
you got
I think
our game at 1 o'clock on
the road is going to be tough at that place, though.
No question
about
it.
I don't think that should be overlooked by any means.
Oh no.
Yeah.
But I want to say we got a chance on Monday at 1 o'clock Sunday. They'll kind of lay down a marker there,
right?
And then the Broncos don't play until Monday night at Cincinnati. If anything, the Bengals need that game just as much, if not more, than the Broncos do. The Bengals are the only division leader that hasn't clinched yet in the AFC. And that's a home game for them. They need the game. They could very easily clinch it for us in terms of the number one overall seed on Monday night. So we're going to lay down that marker on Sunday at 1, beat the Jets, and then we'll just see what happens Monday night. And that would be good to wrap that up if we could, if the Bengals could help us out there. Then we could, you know, kind of finesse the last weekend.
Yeah, why don't you call the Bengals? See if they can help them out.
Well, I think to Jackie's point, it's going to be a very difficult game on Sunday, and certainly the Pats have to take care of business against the Jets before worrying about the hypothetical. And also, Big Al, quite frankly, given the Bengals' track record in primetime games especially, and Andy Dalton, I'm not putting too much faith
in that supposition. I need the game, Bob.
Absolutely. But the Broncos, I'm sure the Broncos, especially after what Terrence Knighton said yesterday, they feel like they needed to.
Yeah.
Listen, Big Al, appreciate the call. Nice chatting with you. Happy holidays.
All right, thanks so much.
Okay, so, Jackie, appreciate you stopping by and your patience. I know you
had
to wait a long time before you had a chance at the mic.
You know, anything for you, Bob.
By the way, I like the cap. You're wearing
a stocking
cap, similar to the one Tom Brady has been sporting a lot in his press conferences.
Yeah, it's
But this one has the Pat Patriot logo.
It does. I like the old school logo, you know? You know, keep things interesting. The little pom-pom on top. I'm still trying to figure it out. It's just really cold in our office. It's only like 45 outside, but it's like really cold in our office. So decided to sport. And plus, I like radio because doesn't matter what I wear in here. So I don't have to worry about anyone judging me except for you.
And just to validate what Jackie's saying, I mean, it's not simply the fact that she's from Georgia and she thinks it's cold in the office. There's a coworker, a colleague of ours, who's from Maine and is wearing a stocking cap around the office.
Oh, exactly, and has a heater under her desk. Yeah. So thank you very much. Yeah, exactly. But it's been a busy week already so far.
It has been, huh?
I mean, Monday, Tuesday, in like a span of 24 hours, I think I went to like 3 community events. So there was a lot going on this week. It's that time of year where there's, you know, a lot of things to do for the holiday season, giving back. So, I've been doing a lot of that this week, and then today was really just full speed ahead on trying to, you know, figure out, you know, get to know the Jets a little bit, where they are now at this point in the season. And, of course, from what we hear in the locker room, it's, you know, throw the records out the window. And I used to not really buy that, but it's just for some reason, and I can't figure it out, the games, at least as long as I've been here, are just always so, like, on the fence with these two teams. Like, it literally could go either way every single time. And so it's going to be interesting. I'm definitely not giving the Patriots a pass on this game. I think they'll win, but it's not going to be easy.
And I think you're right, Jackie. To me, a lot of times you hear athletes say, well, we're focusing on, you know, this game, and it's going to be a tough game, and it's a rivalry game, et cetera, et cetera. You hear it at the college level, you hear it in all sports.
Right.
And many times it's lip service.
Right.
You really understand the rivalry in the way the Jets have played against the Patriots, and also the circumstances, if this is Rex's final game, or even if it's not, the players for the Jets believe it could be.
Right.
And they have played hard for him. And they're going to be very emotional. There's a strong dislike between the two teams, as it is.
Right.
So all the makings are there
of
a tough game for the Patriots on Sunday.
Yeah. And the thing, you know, I think that you have to look at is the rushing and, you know, that the Jets have and the Patriots, you know, being able to stop. Defensively, I think they've been pretty consistent, the Patriots, all season long. But there's just something about having Chandler Jones back that I think is super special to that to this defense here. Not necessarily when it comes to stopping the run, but just you know, the defense has really gotten to a really cool place. It was really cool to talk to everyone in the locker room after the game last week, and especially in reference to Chandler Jones, just how much respect and admiration they have for him. So I think the Patriots, I'm gonna give them the edge this time. I don't think they're gonna, you know. Shame, what's the saying? Fool me once, shame on me, or whatever. You know, I don't know what it is. But I think that they'll do a much better job when it comes to stopping the run than they did earlier in the season. And, you know, certainly I think that they've got the leg up this time.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
There you go. Whatever that saying. I can never get those right.
But I do think the Patriots are much better defensive. I think they're much better as a team overall.
100%.
No question about it. And Bob Wischusen, the voice of the Jets, made that point pretty emphatically when he was on with us, that this isn't the same Patriot team, nor is it really the same Jets team. But still, again, the Jets had a blueprint to keep themselves in the game and have a chance to win at the end when they were here in October. And it figures to be the same blueprint, same approach coming up Sunday.
Yeah, a lot of fourth quarter, you know, comeback, tie, but never really can seem to close the deal. And I think that, too, that's obviously the Patriots have a huge advantage mentally when it comes to that. So
now, Scott Zolak has thoughts about the game.
Good, I want to hear him.
Jackie, let's welcome in our partner, yours on Patriots All Access.
Yeah.
And mine on the Patriots Radio Network, Scott
Zolak.
Zo, what's going on? Happy holidays, Zo.
Why are you even having me on if you have Jackie?
Sup? Well, you know.
Jackie wanted an opportunity, actually, to put you on the grill. Fire away.
Everybody wants to face me.
She thinks I give you too many softballs, as I did the other day in our broadcast.
Where's the beef?
I'll be lit tonight.
Oh, great. Oh, boy.
But
hey, I heard there's a certain picture of my good friend Bob Sosie circulating around Twitter.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta find this.
Don't believe it, Jackie. Hey, listen, got to ask you about the game on Sunday and Jackie's thoughts and mine as well. That it's going to be a tough one for the Pats, regardless of the 3-11 record for the Jets. What are your thoughts?
I thought going into this 3-game stretch here against the division that this would be the toughest one. I really didn't think that Miami, you know, has all the guns to come in here and win. I thought the Patriots played themselves into that position last week, and I just thought that for one game, you know, if any of these teams could just throw the kitchen sink and just do nothing that they've done for the previous 4 weeks. You know, like, most teams kind of plan and build on what they've done week to week to week to week. Jets are in a position right now because I think it's fait accompli. You know, throw it all out the window. Let's put some exotic game plan together to beat New England, and this is our Super Bowl. And that's the dangerous part of it. It's their last game in the stadium there for Rex. And I'm saying that because it's not official, but I think we all agree that this is probably Rex's last job coaching against Bill as a member of the Jets. So it's a dangerous game from that respect. And, you know, you can beat yourself in the NFL. We see it every week. And I respect the Jets. They got a lot of good defensive guys up front. You hear the team talk about it. So they're on extreme high alert. Nobody's talking by right now as far as if they win this game.
I have a question for you, Zo. I mean, certainly we've seen a lot of, you know, Akeem Ayers stepping in for Chandler Jones and, you know, like, you know, guys like Dante Hightower. But how much better is the defense, though, when you have Chandler Jones back there?
I think it's a little bit of everybody. I was shocked at how they used Chandler. They kicked him downside over the guard between the tackle. And normally we saw him get pushed around in those situations where a bigger guy gets on him, and that's just, you know, that's physics. Bigger guy moves the smaller guy. And he really held his own this week. And I think Bob and I were both impressed with the leverage he got. He got into the backfield. And, you know, he got the one strip sack, and then he had the one tackle for a loss. So he did a good job, you know, in his somewhat, I don't want to say limited role, but, you know, I think it's fair to say that the hip looks great. And I think that's a good sign moving forward. We talked a little bit about today on my show that, you know, this defense can be maybe compared to the ones when they won championships, if they're that good, and bail the offense out when they struggle until they get it cranked up.
Wow, those are fighting words there.
Okay, so what do you think about the run defense of the Pats? It seemed that Eddie Lacy for Green Bay might have left some yards on the field, but overall this defense has been so good over the course of the second half of the season especially. And since week 7 in that first game when the Jets ran for over 200 yards and Ivory had 107 of those, do you think this defense is vastly improved in the run game? So they've certainly added some size with Salinga alongside Branch.
I think it's improved overall. I think it's the ability of the linebackers to shed blocks, get off those blocks, and read and react where they were catching people early. Now they're just playing ball. And I think also you got to have the threat of the pass if you're going to be able to run the ball. I don't know if the Jets have that. But I think the Patriots are going to be able to stack the line, get 8 guys up there, and, you know, start sniffing those safeties up. You know, we saw it last week with 3 corners. Maybe this is the week where they play 3 safeties and go to that subset. And that's going to be their base defense this week. Their ability to change week to week is the most impressive thing. It's never the same defensive game plan. You got to credit Matt Patricia for that.
Geno Smith hurt them a bit with his legs in that particular game. And he certainly has played well against the Pats, certainly relatively speaking, compared to the way he's played against the league the last 2 starts against New England. How do you think they'll try to defend him? You mentioned the use of personnel, the safeties, and the extra defensive backs out there. Do you think they'll be a little more aggressive in this particular game?
I think they could pack the zone in tight and make him throw the ball in holes down the field. I don't know if he could do that. And I think they have confidence to do that. You know, this whole game is based on rhythm. You know that you know, guys can get hot, it can get streaky. It's just, you know, he's probably got to feel the weight of the world's on his shoulders right now. And that's a tough thing to do going against a defense, get flip script, you know, series to series. I'd mix it up all day long on him, just never give him the same look. You know, it's not Aaron Rodgers you're playing, it's Geno Smith.
Scott Zolak with us, my partner on the radio broadcast Sunday. Excellent analysis, as usual. Hey, with regards to the overall picture now in the NFL, certainly Seattle has reasserted its defensive dominance.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Arizona, Seattle this week in the NFC. You've got Green Bay coming off that loss against the Buffalo Bills, but in the NFC. In the AFC, here are the Patriots, there are the Broncos. A lot of people feel the Broncos have dropped off considerably. At least Peyton Manning is struggling through something these last couple of weeks. How potent a threat is Denver still at this stage, considering their record overall being the same as the Patriots and the fact that they close out with Cincinnati and then Oakland?
I still think they're clearly second best in the AFC, and I still think they're going to beat. Good thing is Pot Roast Terrence Knight ran his mouth this week, so Bill Belichick will take that highlighter. Granted, he won't say anything to his team. He'll put it in the filing cabinet until Denver week, and you go out and take care of your business. It's funny that they know they're reeling because now all of a sudden they're talking about a team they probably won't even face for 5-6 weeks, you know, if they're lucky here. And just odd to kind of call a team out when you're not even playing them. So I think the fact that Manning doesn't really look that great right now, and yeah, maybe they're trying to find different ways to win games by running the ball and that. All that's in play with them. And I agree. I just don't think that they look real crisp right now. But credit them because they're still grinding out wins and are finding ways to win games.
Zoe, any other thoughts about Sunday with regards to the Pats and the Jets?
Food restaurant?
any plans for Saturday night that we should consider?
I'm looking forward to the smell of the swamp. Which is, New York City has this distinct smell of, I don't know what it is, it's oil, it's I don't know if it's dead rats, the wetlands out in New Jersey.
We're talking about East Rutherford rather than New York City, so.
Oh, no, I like the city. I keep picking me down there, but it's just, I really, you know what, Bob, we're going to end it now, because if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all.
That's what
my
mom always told me.
Especially this time of the year. Zoe, I know you're a busy man as always, and today you made time for us at the end of the show. Appreciate it.
Thanks, and Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy Hanukkah. I know you're in the middle of the Festival of Lights, 8 crazy nights. And, for us celebrating Christmas, you got all that. I got to go Christmas shopping tonight, so
yeah.
It's going to be a hell week.
Do you need my size? Yeah. Oh, then, you know, on second thought, I want to retract that question.
Do you know those man groomers?
Goodbye, Zoe. Scott Zolak.
And Zoe's out.
Well, again, we'll be on the air Sunday from MetLife Stadium.
Did you say man groomer?
I think that's what he said. Thank you for bringing that back up.
I appreciate it. Yes, Kevin.
We put that one away. I'm just kidding. Yeah, y'all are great, though.
Zoe has
you two on the air. Y'all are just something else. I love it. I love it.
I owe it all to Zoe. Zoe just, you know, Zoe gets obsessed with certain subjects, certain topics.
And he comes out of nowhere sometimes. Hard to follow.
Yeah.
But we love
him. You know, and Zoe likes to poke fun at the fact that though I might be losing some hair on top, that I'm not follically challenged, you know, in general. So, you know, he often on his radio show will reference,
Well, you know what? He's got a couple of issues of his own, and since I'm a lady, I'm not going to get into it.
And I will go no further than that.
Yeah.
Zoe has gone no further than that, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Kevin.
It's mere speculation.
He did that in front of me the only time I saw him.
Mere
today.
Speculation on his part. Yeah. I mean, and Kevin, you know, I try to hold this program to a bit higher standard than our usual broadcasts.
Yeah, you know, let loose.
No, I saw him in the hallway for 10 seconds, and it was,
that. Oh,
hey, what's up, Kev Dog?
Yes, and that's Scott Zolak at his best. But you know, the thing is, he's a great analyst, as you can hear, and he does have great insights into the game. And I think that, you know, he makes a great point, Jackie, when it comes to the linebackers of the Patriots shedding blocks early in the season. You know, that's a big part of it. You think about run defense, often you get consumed with the guys up front, that first layer on the defensive line. Certainly, the Patriots have added some beef with Salinga back from the short-term IR, and Alan Branch signed for this team. Akeem Harris is a versatile piece, and he's done a great job holding the edge on the outside.
Right.
On that defensive line. But the linebackers, Dante Hightower, Jamie Collins, so much better against the run going into week 16 as opposed to early in the season. And I think of the Kansas City game foremost, trying to stop Nyle Davis and Jamaal Charles and being unable to do so in that game.
Absolutely. I wish that Jamie Collins wasn't so shy. He's like never in the locker room. We can never talk to him. But I think everyone's noticed by this point, but I think he's definitely been one of the unsung heroes of the defense. I mean, there's a lot that he does that I think people don't typically see unless it's a, you know, blocked field goal or whatever, something, a big play like that. But he's certainly been phenomenal. And they have collectively as a group gotten a lot better. You know, this, like we said, I mean, this is just repeating earlier, just the entire defense as a whole. But you can tell they're finding their rhythm and their comfort level. And, you know, that's huge. I mean, especially like, you know, with Jerod Mayo gone, I think that was, I mean, we certainly knew, like, I had confidence in Hightower's ability just because of last year, but, you know, you just never know. You never know how the dynamic's going to shake out, and they've really improved a lot.
Yeah, and that's also a good point regarding Mayo's absence. Keep in mind, as you think about that first game between these teams and now this one forthcoming, Mayo's first game on the sideline after the injury was that Jets matchup on a Thursday night when the Patriots really had no time to prepare and make the adjustments
so that
with a short week.
A huge thing to look
Chandler
for.
Jones was playing through a hip injury, which ultimately sent him to the sideline after that game for the next six contests.
Yeah.
So the Pats going into that game certainly were not at full strength, and really was an effort just to survive that game to get to the following contest a week and a half later, and from that point on,
I think
really
they have bad memories from how that one went. I mean, a win's a win, but in no way were they pleased with how they did. So I don't think they'll give anything up.
Before I let you go and we close out to the spirit of the season, and you talked at the top about a lot of events taking place this week.
Yeah.
Number of guys, Patrick Chung.
Right.
Chung changing lives. Vince Wilfork doing his annual shopping spree.
Right, the gifts
for
the
less than privileged at the Bass Pro Shop here at Patriot Place. Mm-hmm. How active have guys been the last few days in particular in you know, yourself just being on the scene?
Yeah, there's been a lot of guys. There was a Play 60 event yesterday morning. There were three guys who went to that. But the Chung karaoke event, I could probably name to you the guys who weren't there on one hand as opposed to the guys who were. I mean, a ton of guys came out for that. The gifts from the Gridiron thing last night, that's always huge, always a lot of support for that. And it's just cool. I mean, the Vince Wilfork Foundation partners up with a couple of other, groups, and they you know, raise money, and they give each, there's like 50 kids, I think, and who are underprivileged, and they get $400 each to wow. spend on, you know, they have to buy like a coat, gloves, hat, and then they have a little bit of extra money they can spend on themselves, but they're also encouraged to get someone something else. And so it's just, I feel like it would be so easy for a professional athlete to just kind of be like, I'm not going to, you know, I got a big game this week, I'm not going to do that. And for them to, for so many of them to come out and to be so engaged, I mean, it truly is, it's really, it sounds cheesy, but so cool to watch, because these kids get such a big, they get so much out of it. It does so yeah. much for them. So yeah. it was fun. Past couple of days have been fun.
Yeah, even a lot of guys, it would be easy just to cut a check. I mean, they make right. a lot of money, cut a check. And,
exactly.
And, but these guys are investing their time as well.
Right. And, you know, Devin McCourty has become probably my favorite player. He's just always so good. And he, you know, is nominated, the Patriots nominee for the Walter Payton Award this week. So, you know, no one more deserving, I think, this year than Devin McCourty.
Yeah, Devin McCourty nominated, as Jackie mentioned, for that distinction. Matthew Slater nominated for the Sportsmanship Award. Mm-hmm. The Patriots certainly well represented by those two guys,
right.
both in the community and as well on the field. Another guy that we should know, too, Darius Fleming made a visit with the Boston Pops, Keith Lockhart, and mm-hmm. Musicians from the Boston Pops to Boston Children's Hospital.
Yeah, and
the
yeah, there's
24 hours.
You know, Chris White is someone, too, who's been at a lot of these events but doesn't get a whole lot of attention, because he's not a big name on the roster, but he's, you know, he was at a Veterans Day thing I went to. Then he was also at the YMCA event, the Legends Ball that night. I mean, there's just a lot of guys that you just don't see who are very involved in the community. And just, you know, it, sometimes it is good to put the football away for a little bit. And they, you know, they're human beings. So, so yeah, they've been doing a lot of that kind of stuff over the past 2 weeks, just the holiday spirit type of things, which is fun.
Patriots going to New York metropolitan area, not New York City, of course, but
right.
The Meadowlands on Sunday. You're going to have a chance to go into the city at all, maybe see Rockefeller Center on Saturday night?
You know what? That's a good point. We should.
I just thought of that.
Yeah, I really should do that. I mean, how many chances do you get to do that, right? Yeah. You know what? We'll see. I'm trying to be more adventurous in my life, so we'll see. Might do that. I don't know how far it is, so, you know, that's always kind of a... And what the snow level is like, I don't know if I can handle that. So we'll see. What about you? You going to get out there and see it?
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
You know, we're at an undisclosed location. I can't reveal
right.
where we are.
Right.
It's not in the city, but nonetheless, if there's an opportunity to get into the city and get out
right.
at a reasonable hour, it's
right.
the city that never sleeps, but I
right.
do need my sleep
exactly.
for the podcast.
I know.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
But,
so cool.
Well, Jackie, thanks for the time.
Thanks
Have
for
a
having
wonderful
me.
Weekend, including the trip to the Meadowlands.
Yes.
And we'll see you or talk to you next week as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely, you as well.
All right,
thanks,
Jackie
Bob.
Britton, our guest, Scott Zolak, Bob Wischusen, Sean Stellato, Sebastian Vollmer, producer Kevin Collins, and thanks so much to you for listening on the broadcast and the podcast. Thanks for downloading as well as logging on to listen live, and we'll be back, of course, live next Wednesday from 4 to 6 with the Bob Soucy Show from our Subway Fresh broadcast studios inside Gillette Stadium. So long, everyone, and once more, happy holidays.
Thanks for listening to the Bob Soucy Show, exclusively on Patriots.com Radio.
Sets up with a throw to the right side, catch made by Edelman, turns to the end zone, and he runs it past the five. He dives to the end zone! Touchdown! And the lead for the Patriots!
Bob will be back next Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. with the latest news and reaction from this week's game, as well as a preview of the Patriots' next opponent.
Hand off Ridley, runs it right. Ridley dives to the goal line. He's in again! Touchdown, Patriots!
Log on to Patriots.com anytime to find the latest Bob Soucy Show podcasts, as well as the very latest news and information on your favorite team.
Shotgun snap to Manning. Play fake. A throw to the near side. Ball picked off by Logan Ryan. Diving. Break on the ball.
He's got it.
As he stepped in front of Eric Decker.
He's got it.
Patriots take over.
This place is berserk.
We look forward to hearing from you on the next edition of the Bob Soucy Show.